day up there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 358. This is the beached edition, because that's where I am. Hopefully everybody out there is having a great week. I am just going to preemptively say that the weather's going to have been fine, and everything's going to be great and wonderful in the land of South Carolina, where we are currently vacationing. However, I decided to take this little break and allow my son to terrorize the local seagull population while I brought you this wonderful edition of the Caffeination podcast. Fun in the sun, as it were, so hopefully you are having a great week, despite the fact that I'm rubbing in your face that I'm actually on the beach. Because why? Because I actually thought long and hard about this. I know so many people who either live in Hawaii, they go to all these interesting and strange tropical locations, or they just plain go on vacation, and they rub everybody's face in it while they're there and you're not. I've gotten so many pictures and postcards and everything else, I figured this was my chance to do it. I mean, no disrespect to you, but I just really needed this vacation. And as I sit here officially a couple days from actually making it, I can't wait to go. So hopefully everything is still going all right by the time this actually airs. If it isn't, I might have to drop in and make a much more reserved and demure actually one. So hopefully everybody out there is going to enjoy what we got going for you here today. The Caffeination Podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other member shows, including us, have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content, all of which is listed over at techpodcasts.com. We are also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network. That's B-L-U-B-R-R-Y. It's a social podcasting network site, kind of like MySpace for podcasts. It's a fun place to go over there and play around, see what other people are doing, and see who listens to what. It's a great little resource to, if you're looking for new shows to listen to. Same with the tech podcasts. All right, now it's just really kind of cool. We have a great amount of Geekcraft and an interesting amount of food and caffeinated bits. I went to the well, found some funnier older stuff to kind of pull out. There's interesting little robot articles. There's a whole bunch of really cool stuff that I want to talk to you about today. But before we get into all that, I did want to make mention of the sponsor for today's show. Today's show is sponsored in part by GoToMeeting. You can cut travel costs by using GoToMeeting, but we've already talked about that. It's easy enough to go online, set up your meetings, and have everybody meet you there. No matter what you have on your screen, they can see it there. But what else does it do for you? Well, it allows you to work and meet from anywhere. You don't have to be tied to your desk. You don't have to even be tied to your house. If you're on vacation, you can demo products. You can do anything. So you can strike while the iron is hot. You can meet opportunity where you need to. You can meet with anyone, anywhere, right from your desk or from wherever you happen to be. You can collaborate in real time on presentations, documents, and spreadsheets. And attendees don't even need to sign up for the service to join. You only have to have the account. It's really, really nice. And they even have integrated phone and voice over IP conferencing included. And all of that for one low price at $49 a month. It's unlimited meetings, no overages, no hidden charges. Well, the only thing that you have to do right now is start your free 30-day trial. Please visit www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcasts. That's www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcasts for a free 30-day trial. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They allow us to do all kinds of crazy and cool stuff, and they allow us to bring you the great content that we are currently doing right now. All right, up first, we have an interesting little article from over at daylife.com. It's a crazy robot that's appearing in Japan. Actually, it's appearing in the Vienna University of Technology, but I think that it had something to do with Japan. I can't actually figure out why these things keep doing. I don't understand what the robot's supposed to do. I know that it's supposed to allow people to do things like cooking and cleaning and playing games. However, if you look at the robot, it's not yet the uncanny valley. It looks more like child's play, like it has the marionette mouth, which I know that a lot of people actually really hate. You know, the two hinged jaws, has giant sunken in eyes that are kind of like dead and staring and beady, and for some reason it has a baby blue toque or a baby blue hat on. Overall, no matter what you dress the bottom end of the robot in, I don't care if it has a face like that. I don't want it anywhere near me, especially not for $21,000. This debuted at June 29th, 2009, and it's just off the wall. I mean, the people over in Vienna actually really need to go and check out some of the robots that they've been releasing in Japan, despite the fact that I thought this was originally Japanese, because they've found a way to kind of cut the difference between really spooky, freaky robot and too close to humans for comfort. So, you know, some of them, they either, you know, eschew the face completely, or they have, you know, like a kind of a cutesy face. This is much more horror show, much less interesting or cool. I don't care what it would do for you. Next little thing we have up for you here, how about having fingers on your feet, or gloves on your feet? That's what the new shoes, the Vibram 5 Fingers, are. Now, you may or may not have seen these. I know one guy I work with actually has these. They're $75 for these, and I really don't know whether or not I would ever actually buy them. Basically, there's a separate little pocket for each one of your toes. They're saying that this is the closest thing to barefoot running that you will ever get, unless you try and run barefoot. And there's a lot of dangers with running barefoot. They're saying that it actually improves your posture, it strengthens your feet, and allows for, you know, it actually reduces the amount of bad running form. So most people actually tend to strike with their heel first as they're on long distance runs, which is actually anatomically incorrect for how you're supposed to run. It puts a lot of strain on the back end your heel. You're supposed to actually strike in the midfoot and do this. And one of the weird things, you know, aside from these Vibram 5 Fingers, is when I was on track in high school, I gotta tell you, it really messed with my mind, because our track coach started talking about strategies and altering the way in which you ran, and you had to run with this part of your foot hitting the ground first, and you had to stretch your legs out this much. I couldn't run normally, like regularly, for years after the fact. So as soon as Mr. Baker's theories and everything are out of my head, I'm pretty sure I'll be able to actually run without thinking about running. So this might be one of the steps in that direction. It's interesting to see how far shoe technology has come to the fact that they actually have soles for each individual toe. They're saying that there's certain things that they can't actually accommodate for. For instance, if you have webbed feet, they don't make shoes for that. They also have the same company that actually does them. Vibram's been making soles for other sneakers and shoes for a long time. But they also make a set of sneakers for your dog's feet. I don't know why your dog would need them, but, you know, hey, whatever. I just thought it was kind of fun. They have an interesting little write-up of them over at Wired. Wired's kind of striking me a little bit weird, and we'll be talking about a little bit later on in the show. These things are actually kind of freaky and ugly. I don't know if I would actually buy them, but they're supposedly incredibly technologically advanced for shoes. So I just wanted to pass it along because I thought it was fun. All right, 2,700 horsepower jet truck leaves other pickups in its jet wash. You heard me here correctly. This is a 2,700 horsepower jet strapped to the back of a pickup truck. I have no clue why you would do this. It's fed by a 20-gallon kerosene tank that takes $10,000. It's a $10,000 jet propulsion engine actually strapped into the bed of the pickup truck, and he's driving it down the highway. Never mind those pesky details of 0 to 60 acceleration and weight. This guy is driving a jet truck. Is how they say it's not street legal. I have no clue how it would actually. They say it's only it's capable of going 516 miles an hour. I don't know where you could actually do that, but saying it takes a while to actually get up and get going. The funny thing about these things, we've seen a lot of different jet cars and stuff like that over the past couple years. The jet wash behind the vehicle itself is more dangerous than the actual high speeds at which the vehicle is moving. So it kind of be interesting to see exactly how far back the jet wash reached on this vehicle. I just wanted to pass it along because I thought it was relatively crazy. All right, now the next little thing that we have for you here is how many of you have ever tried to make the pew 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 laser sounds from Star Wars? Well, how about doing it with a couple little things you may have hanging around the house? You don't need that big studio budget. Yes, that's correct. All you need is a cup and a slinky, and you too can create the sound effects from Star Wars. From things like laser bursts to explosions, if you have a microphone, if you have a styrofoam cup, it's really kind of cool to see the different things that this gentleman can actually do. He basically suspends one metal slinky from someplace up very high on top of bookshelves. He then covers the bookshelves going down with paper, I'm assuming to reduce the strange vibrations off the different books and actually give it like a consistent sheet going down, a consistent wall to actually bounce the sound off of. And then he, you know, basically flicks the coils and it makes the pew pew sound. It also makes big explosions and all other kinds of stuff. It's funny because this is about as close to Foley effects that you can get at home as possible. So it's kind of cool, and I wanted to pass it along. All right, next little story that we got for you here. Canadian startup proposes nuclear fusion power plant at a bargain price. Now, there's two things that I never want to hear in the same sentence. Nuclear fusion and bargain price. I don't care if you have to spend a little bit extra money, but you might want to put some anti-Chernobyl walls and things and safeguards in there. I just don't think that touting the fact that it's going to be incredibly inexpensive is a good thing to do. It's just kind of crazy to see the different things that they're attempting to propose here. They're talking about the difference between fission and fusion, and they're saying that there's actually possible to build a practical fusion reactor for electricity production. Unlike nuclear fission, the process used in current natural power stations where atoms are torn apart to release energy, fusion instead involves squeezing two heavy hydrogen atoms to make different things together. And so when they fuse, they produce harmless helium and vast amounts of energy. Now, I don't understand if... Now, I know that cold fusion isn't an actuality at this point. It doesn't exist. There's no way to create it, despite the fact that other people may think so. So this might be warm fusion, but they're saying that the byproducts of this process are significantly less lethal. But still, anytime you have the word nuclear, I don't want it to be at a bargain price. It's a really cool article. It's a really interesting solution that's actually up there, and the company is called Global Fusion. They say that mechanical brute force approach using low-tech pneumatic rams instead of expensive high-powered stuff is going to actually reduce the cost of actually creating fusion this way by a tenfold, which is going to be insane. So... I mean, I understand why they're saying it. I understand why they're touting the inexpensivity, but it's still kind of freaky to actually think about that. And so who knows if it's actually going to get off the ground, but I know any change in the way that electricity is reproduced or produced, rather, as long as it's a little bit more efficient, you know, I don't care cost-wise. If it's more efficient and more ecologically sound, I mean, if it's going to produce harmless gas as opposed to the radioactive rods, then I think it's going to be a better thing to deal with. But, you know, don't tout the budget aspect. That's a little bit too weird. All right, do you have a mutt? I do, except our mutt's actually kind of an official mutt. It's a Yorkie poo. I'm a little bit embarrassed even saying that, but we rescued her from somebody who couldn't take care of her anymore. Well, Suki's her name, and she's supposedly part Yorkshire Terrier and part poodle. She's not the small dogs that you see online, though. She's a relatively mid-sized small dog, so she's like 10, 12 pounds, something like that, as opposed to like the 3-pound ones that I've seen online. But I don't think I could walk a 3-pound dog. I just think that would be a little harming to my masculinity, but taking the best dog that I've ever owned was my parents' dog, Aggie, and she was a utter and complete mix of who knows what. We knew there was a little terrier, there might have even been a little German Shepherd in her, but if you went on over to Device.com, you could actually figure a genealogy kit to determine exactly what kind of mutt you have. They're saying there's a couple different things that you can actually do here. It basically tests your dog's DNA. For only $60, you get a fancy certificate, and they tell you exactly what order your pup's ancestry is. For instance, they have one that's a Chow Chow, Afghan Hound, Pembroke Welsh Corgi, and a Collie. It's a cute dog nonetheless. But it's kind of interesting. They say it's 93% of the world's most common breeds are actually in here, so it's kind of cool. Now, it's fun to see if you have a pedigreed dog, if it actually is 100% pedigreed. If you have a dog that's supposed to be a mix between a Yorkshire Terrier and a Poodle, if you take the little test and find out that, hey, somebody threw a little Collie in there somewhere, then maybe you might want to go back to the story and say, hey, you know what, this is Yorkipoo Akali, or something other than that. I've seen other names for Yorkipoo. The one girl who lives next door has actually said we should start calling her a Pookie as opposed to a Yorkipoo, and even despite the fact that that's just as cute and cuddly of a name, I might end up doing it, because Yorkipoo is too long to actually say. So, All right, moving right along, because everybody has a mutt. I love mutts. I don't know. I don't know about you. I just think they have so much better personalities. All right, now next little thing that we have for you here is... in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's a jet truck. Well, not entirely. This is a crazy little turbine strapped to a truck, not unlike the one that we talked about before. This one's actually on a Russian airfield. It's a giant Mack truck style thing with a strange caboose and wheelhouse actually sitting on top of it, with a turbine engine pointing out the front like a cannon. And there was some discussion over at Gizmodo as to what this thing actually was. And what it turns out is that it's a state-of-the-art, off-the-wall Russian de-icing machine. What they basically did was they ripped a turbine off of a old engine, and they turned it around and allow it to basically fry the ice off the wings of planes. They're saying that it's also capable of helping to jumpstart bigger jet engines, because they can't actually get up and running in incredibly cold weather. So I thought it was really cool and wanted to pass it along. And the fact that it looks like some kind of like crazy post-apocalyptic weapon like you might see in a Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome kind of thing just made me laugh. I mean, it actually really kind of looks like the truck a little bit from Mad Max. So I wanted to pass it along because I thought it was pretty funny. All right, now next one, we have a little bit of a touchy story here. Apple notices the dictionaries have dirty words in them, and they're starting to rate them as NC-17 or whatever else they're rating them. And at last reading, they were actually banning this one application because it had nasty words in it that were, you know, like... The F word, the H word, you know, whatever else. I don't even know what the H word would be. H-E double hockey sticks, perhaps. All the words that you can't say on a family-friendly thing. But there's something called a Ninja Words Pocket Dictionary. It's a $2 app. It's been given a 17-plus rating after being censored by Apple. So basically... you wouldn't be able to go through and find out all the different words that are naughty in there. You do realize that the dictionaries have been around for quite some time, and they've had curses in them for quite some time as well. So despite the fact that Apple wants to be everybody's gatekeeper, I think it's kind of ridiculous that they would censor something like this. The process that things are going through over at Apple for, you know, approval and disapproval, every time they make one right move, like, you know, they ban a certain type of app or something like that that's actually causing issues or is a ripoff, they always seem to fall back and just mess up completely and utterly. I don't know what anybody else thought about that. Like, are you afraid of dictionaries? Do you actually have the words redacted in dictionaries in your home? You know, did you go through, find all the naughty bits and say, you know what, you're not allowed to read this, Junior? I don't think I would. I mean, if your kid is enterprising enough to try and go through a dictionary just to find out what a word means, isn't that kind of the idea behind it? That might be me. I don't know. All right, next little thing we have up for you here is an interesting little story from over at ecogeek.org. Tire maker designs a rubber-paneled electric SUV. Now, I'm a fan of SUVs, despite the fact that it's an incredibly unpopular position to be in. I like driving them. I like having a slightly bigger vehicle. I'm a wider individual. I'm broad-shouldered. I don't like squeezing into a car. And I like, I have to basically be able to go down to where I work, no matter, you know, rain or sleet or shine. It doesn't matter. Not saying that here in Philadelphia we have, you know, 6 tons of snow, but I'm considered essential personnel, so even if the university's closed, I gots to get in. So it's interesting when you see tire manufacturer actually kind of take over and look at things. And as tire manufacturers are wont to do, they ended up using a lot of recycled tires to actually make the rubber panels for the side of the vehicle. And not only that, but they're making it entirely electric. There's actually a 100 horsepower electric engine in each one of the wheels so that you can actually have different configurations, front wheel drive, rear wheel drive, or all wheel drive. There's a built-in software that controls the motors differently so you can actually change your traction. And here's the even cooler thing. They're saying that the best feature on the car is actually the tires. Go figure, it's actually a Korean tire manufacturer that made the thing. But if you're going off-road driving, they deflate to reveal metal lugs to aid in the traction. When you get back on the road, the air cavities expand, inflating the tires and covering up the metal lugs for smooth driving. This is fantastic. So it has the whole regenerative braking thing going. This is the kind of car that needs to be made, you know? This is the kind of thing that you would see a soccer mom drive or something like that. I mean, it might be a little bit advanced, you know what I mean? But this is the kind of vehicle that people need, you know, this is a suburban assault vehicle that people kind of look for repeatedly. So it'd be kind of fun to see where this one heads. You know, it's never going to actually come to fruition looking like it does now. So any cool concept cars that are out there always seem to kind of look rather generic by the time they're actually released. I don't know about you, but nothing says loving like a giant inflatable cockroach in your pool. You heard me here correctly. There's a raft that actually looks like a giant cockroach. The thing's $30, so if you want to spend $30 on a giant cockroach, then you are more than welcome to do so. I do have a relative who carries around plastic insects with him, and at family parties, he actually puts them in the potato salad. I don't think that this would be up his alley because it's a little bit larger, and I think you'd need a giant bowl of potato salad. So, but, just kind of weird, and I wanted to pass it along because I thought it was funny, and it has a little bit of a beach theme, which is where I am right now. All right, next little thing that we have up for you here is a really sad... There's two little stories here. Both are from Wired, and the first one's actually well-written and kind of interesting. The first one says that there's mysterious high tides on the East Coast are perplexing scientists. Now, it's saying that the scientists are unsure as to why the standard and generic high tides on the eastern coast of the United States this year are actually as much as 2 feet over where they're supposed to be. I haven't really noticed that because Philadelphia, while it's in the tidal area, I haven't gone fishing in the tidal areas enough to actually know. noticed that, hey, the water's up significantly higher than it should be. They're saying that there hasn't necessarily been large wind gusts or anything. There's not even, like, you know, a synchronization with full moons or anything like that. They just can't figure out why this is. They're saying that it might have something to do with a reactionary type effect from El Nino, but they haven't been measuring things long enough to actually figure out some of the long cycles that the planet's on. For instance, El Nino, you know, spans a decade of different things that happen in the entire effect. So this, they're saying that this might be kind of like a decade long situation where they haven't just noticed it before. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see exactly what happens and where the tides take them going forward. I just never thought that never thought that there'd be something like that. I hope it doesn't actually affect anything while we're on vacation. All right, next little thing up here. Now, I'm not linking to the article, I'm linking to the comments. I've never really done this before, but I had to. Wired seems to have been getting sloppy lately. The article that they put up here is 10 Worst Evolutionary Designs. I think they're kind of stretching and they might be hiring some sloppy writers. But they said, number one is a sea mammal blowhole. Any animal that spends appreciable time in the ocean should be able to extract oxygen from the water via gills. There's just, like, some things that are off the wall. There's, for instance, they have things like a giraffe birth canal. The fact that giraffe babies actually drop from 6 to 8 feet up. Or they have a human stomach can accept a lot of, can digest a lot of food except for cellulose. When you read the comments under this story, it's just kind of sad. One of the things that they actually list is quadrupeds as an evolutionary mistake. Four-footed animals. They're saying there's a wound on your back or an itch, a bug wandering up, tough luck. Kid, you probably can't do much about it. Hope there's a low tree branch around. It's just kind of sloppy, nasty, boring writing that when you really look at it, after you're done, you're like, okay, what exactly was that to do? Was it supposed to try and pull in page views, or was it supposed to pull in anything else? And the best part about it is Wired has kind of marketed themselves over the years to geeks. So it's not like they're just, you know, like your standard local paper or something like that, where you're going to get a range of people that are going to be looking at this. Geeks get geeky about all different kinds of topics, whether it's evolution, whether it's science, chemistry, physics. If you make a mistake in an article or in a podcast or in a posting in any way, most geeks are going to call you on it. They're going to let you know exactly where and how often you're wrong. And they're doing it at length lately over at Wired. So I just linked it up over here so that you can actually see some of the stuff that's up there. I just thought it was an example of incredibly sloppy journalism, and I don't know if anybody else is seeing the same thing from Wired. And you'd kind of hope that a bastion of geek culture like Wired would kind of do a little bit better job. So I just wanted to put it up there because I was getting irritated. I mean, Wired's one of the sources that I check when I'm looking for fodder for the show. So it's kind of frustrating to me that they're doing such a poor job of actually providing fodder, let's just say. All right, next up we have the food and caffeinated bits here over at the Caffeination Podcast. In case you were wondering where this and all the other episodic friends are listed, they are lovingly nestled over at www.caffination.com. That is caffeination.com. We are the Caffeination Podcast, and here are the rest of the stories. First up, Wicked Nasty Coffee Maker. I'm calling this the Despresso. I don't like linking things over at Trend Hunter Magazine because they are intensely irritating to actually find the real link for where this thing was originally put up. But they have an interesting article about an espresso machine that was actually done by an industrial artist. And you can see some of the concept designs that are up there. It looks like a mine from World War II. It's a giant stainless steel metal sphere with spikes sticking out it. And then there's a tripod set of legs that actually go around the side. The espresso machine actually has, you know, sits over where the cups would go. There's the handle and everything so you can pull your shots. I think it's really cool. I would like to see a little bit more off-the-wall, crazy industrial designs in the espresso machine world. I would love to actually see one of these rocking in a Starbucks. I think that would be off-the-wall. Like, you walk in, hi, can I have some of the Death by Coffee, please? And they would go over there, the mine-looking thing. They'd pull a nice big shot out for you, and then you could head out on your way. Just thought it really kind of interesting and wanted to pass it along to everybody. Next up here, we have a design concept, Smart Measure Kitchen Measuring Cup for people too lazy to look at the side of the cup itself. I don't know about you, but one of the biggest design problems in the kitchen is not the fact that when I put water into a measuring cup, I can't tell how much water's in there. You know why? Because there's a lovely little graduated line on the side of it. However, if you want to have that kind of functionality, there's actually a design concept that's actually being put out there that as soon as you have any kind of liquid in the cup at all, it tells you exactly how much water you have. Now, I don't know what to say. I don't know if it does it by weight, or, you know, water is like 8 pounds per gallon or something like that. Also, I don't know if it does it by volume, if there's little sensors in there, but it just doesn't seem to be the kind of thing that really needed to be addressed. There's so many other things that are in the kitchen that kind of need to be worked on that I didn't really think this was a pressing matter, let's just say. I just wanted to pass it along because it's actually kind of nicely designed. It's just kind of sad. All right, next little story that we have up for you here is, would you rather have coffee, free coffee, or a job? Now, this is a lovely little story from over in Montvale, New Jersey, where they said that the borough workers actually have been getting free coffee and tea and accompanying condiments since before anybody could remember. By cutting out the coffee and the tea and the condiments, they were able to save over $6,000 a year, which equated to like, you know, $52 per year per employee. I don't know any other place around there that actually provide any place around here that actually provides free coffee. I've seen a lot of people do kind of like a co-op system, which is where I kind of wanted to take this situation in. If you work in an office where there's a bunch of people actually working together and everybody enjoys coffee, and if there is a, you know, community coffee machine, I was curious how you ran it. Like, does your company actually, you know, contract with different coffee vendors, or do you kind of like everybody brings in coffee for, you know, one day a week or something like that? I would personally really kind of enjoy having like a coffee collective or a coffee collaborative where everybody would have like a week and they would have to bring in like a pound of coffee or something like that, and it would kind of spread the wealth around, and you'd also get to kind of try out some really crazy coffees. The only problem is you're going to have people who, you know, bring in like the 8 o'clock coffee or like the Folgers or stuff like that, and then you're going to also have people like me who bring in a Tanzanian peaberry or something strange like that. But I got to tell you, I would just kind of like that more. The only weird thing is I work one for all intents and purposes, so all the coffee that is drunk in my office is all my coffee, so it's all good stuff. Unless, of course, you know, we're having a down week and I go to one of the emergency bags. Alright, now the next little thing we have up for you here is a mobile coffee maker for vehicles. Again, another poor story from over at Trend Hunter magazine with very little information but some cool pictures. They're saying that there's actually consoles that exist in the middle of cars that you can actually create, you know, like single cup coffee machines. You know what? I'm perfectly fine either getting my coffee on the way to work, making my coffee before I leave for work, or making my coffee while I'm at work. I don't need to actually make coffee while I'm in the vehicle. I especially don't need to have it as part of the armrest. While I appreciate the design that went into it, hot beverages are hot beverages, and I think they should kind of be treated with kid glove when you're talking about driving around. So there's so many distractions that are on the road right now, I didn't really think that we needed an extra one of actually trying to pull the perfect shot, if you know what I mean. All right, next little thing we have up for you here. In the last show, we talked a little bit about a wonderful website called informationisbeautiful.net. This is yet another of their fine productions. It's great little infographics that are up there. They say caffeine and calories. So they have a complete list of different caffeinated beverages, anywhere from plain and simple coffee to Big Mac to fries. It goes from a glass of wine to iced coffee all the way up at the top. And they say the amount of calories, the amount of fat that's actually in each one of these. It's a great little graphic that kind of stretches the length and breadth of stuff. They have calories versus caffeine. It's a little XY chart. All of the calories below from 0 to 150, 150 being the median area. They say the highest up there is a hot chocolate with whipped cream, and a Big Mac is like over 600 calories. Then they had at the bottom painkillers or small iced coffee or brewed coffee black, which is as close to zero as I think you can get. I love information graphics, so I wanted to pass it along because I thought it was pretty cool. All right, next little thing we have up for you here is an incredibly good story that kind of bangs home a point that really needs to be made every once in a while. Iced coffee is more caloric than your meal? Well, yeah, if you take a large iced coffee, you add cream and sugar and everything else to it, it can have, they're saying the worst is a venti large dark berry mocha frappuccino from Starbucks, which is 561 calories. I think every once in a while, especially during the summer, because we tend towards the sweeter and the colder drinks, you kind of need to kind of beat it into people's head that, yes, you know what? Those drinks are incredibly bad for you. They have such high amounts of sugar and cream and everything that it's basically just like eating a Big Mac for all intents and purposes. So I just kind of wanted to pass that along, and hopefully it kind of got through to somebody it needed to. Next little story that we have for you here, there's only two little left, and then we'll head you out on your way. 10 creative cups from over at yankodesign.com. This is a listing of 10 different design concepts, from things as simple as a tea teacup with a saucer under it that actually has a hollowed out space for the spent tea bag so that you don't have to worry about your cup sitting in it. There's coffee cups that actually lock into each other's a la Legos so that you can actually carry them easily. There's a coffee cup that actually sits that has a CD player under it. There's personalized coffee cups. There's Braille coffee cups. There's one of my favorites is actually a design cup that when you look at it, it says, hey, there's a full cup of coffee. And then when you drink down, you notice that there's a slight indentation in the one area. And then as you get to the bottom of the coffee, you realize that the indentation has grown and that it actually looks like a heart as you get all the way to the bottom. So I thought that was kind of fun and kind of cool. Then they have the other strange little computer cups and stuff like that, which are just really off the wall. And then the last two little thing they have is styrofoam cup speakers and a great little industrial design version of a teacup. So I wanted to kind of pass them along because I thought they were fun. And the last little story that we have for you here today is courtesy of Tim Ferriss, the guy who wrote the 4-Hour Work Week or whatever else you want to. He's the, how does he describe himself? Experiments in lifestyle design. Well, I am all for finding efficient ways to get into food because I like food. I was stunned a couple weeks ago when we talked about the banana and the fact that monkeys don't eat bananas by peeling down the stem. They actually invert the banana, pinch the tip, and peel it out. And I gotta tell you, ever since doing that, I felt my banana eating life has changed to become so much more simple. Now, I like hard-boiled eggs. In fact, I would go so far as to say I love them. I really think they're really nice. I hate peeling them with a passion that burns very hot. So there's an interesting little story that Tim actually put up there. It says how to peel a hard-boiled egg without peeling. First thing he says is put a half teaspoon of baking soda in with the hard-boiled eggs as you were actually boiling them. It changes the pH of the water and allows for greater or less adhesion between the egg and the actual shell. Then he sits the egg down on one side, basically breaks open a little hole at the bottom, breaks open a little hole at the top. Then he puts his hand around it, holds the shell tightly, and blows very hard and actually shoots the egg right out. This is unbelievable. If this actually works, and I'm going to be trying it, but if this actually works, this is going to save me so much time and frustration. I swear I only got a third of an egg the other day because the shells, bent inward. I tried to do the rolling thing. Nothing was working. I was getting frustrated, and I was like, you know what? I'm not making any more hard-boiled eggs. I did a search to see if there was an easier way to peel a hard-boiled egg, and I came up with this. So I wanted to pass it along, see if anybody else had any success with it. All right, that about wraps it up here for Caffeination number 358, the Beach Edition, or Beached Edition, because that's where I am right now. Hopefully you enjoyed today's show. If you are looking for this show, you can head on over to www.caffination.com. That is caffeination.com, coincidentally enough. And you can find all the other episodic little friends. As well, you can find all the different ways to contact me. If you have any comments, feedback, suggestions, or hate mail, please feel free to fire one off to caffeination@gmail.com. And if that doesn't work for you, there's a whole plethora of other ways to contact me over at the Caffeination homepage. All right. That about wraps it up. I would like to thank you from the bottom of my heart for tuning in, and stay caffeinated, people.